puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
And the first autumnal edition of A Band in Manitoba with Gordon Goldsborough from the Manitoba Historical Society, just with about, 15 minutes of daylight here. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Bruce.
I understand that you've got a bit of an update, first of all, from something from a couple of weeks back.
I do. We talked about Winnipeg's tallest buildings, where you could get a scenic view of the city. And 3 days after the broadcast, I actually had an opportunity to visit 201 Portage. That's our second tallest building. And in fact, until 2022, it was our tallest building.
Right.
And as I suspected, in order to get to the top, you have to have a special key card. Well, luckily, I got on the elevator with someone who worked on the 30th floor, and they nicely permitted me to walk the entire perimeter of that floor. And I took in a spectacular view of all sides of the building. And, you know, if you ever get a chance to see the city from the top of one of our tall buildings, do take advantage. It's really quite spectacular.
Was this planned or just by chance?
It was kind of by chance.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, right place, right time for
somebody like
you.
Exactly.
Yeah. I remember being up in the Richardson Building and one of the top floors when I was a kid. As you mentioned, you did yourself as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, okay, what are we discussing this week?
Well, back in August of 2023, a little over 2 years ago, I bought an old photo album from an online auction website. The album was being sold by a collectibles dealer in Flint, Michigan, and they described it as 1905 leather photo album. Now, this in itself would not have been enticing, but the words Waskada Man, and I assumed man stood for Manitoba, were handwritten on the album's leather cover, along with a photo. It was almost faded to invisibility, but it was labeled grain elevators. And of course, everyone knows my absolute fixation with that.
Yep.
Other photos inside the album showed, well, panoramic views of Waskada that, you know, must have been taken from the top of those grain elevators. And there were many other photos that showed people, buildings, animals. It seemed likely to me that the album had been compiled by someone living in Waskada in 1905. Other than the photo on the cover, which, well, I think it probably faded due to light exposure through the years, all the photos inside were clear and vibrant, and it essentially provided a look at life in this southwestern Manitoba town from 120 years ago. I had to have the album, so I placed a bid, and I was ultimately successful.
When you teased this last week, and I was a little skeptical, thinking, what are you, an old photo album from somebody in Flint, Michigan? We'll get to it in a second, because you brought it in with you, and I'm sorry I doubted you. It's just a fine, fine specimen of the past. But first of all, how did the album end up in Michigan? Do you know?
I have no idea. Initially, I thought the original owners of the album, you know, maybe they'd moved to the U.S., but my later research that I'll talk about in a few minutes would find no evidence of this. But there was a bit of irony in the case, because although the album ended up in the U.S., it was hard to bring it back to Canada.
Oh.
The seller would not ship it outside the U.S., which I thought was kind of odd, given that the album came from Canada and it seemed to relate entirely to Canada. I suppose they must not have wanted to deal with, you know, U.S. and Canadian customs. I find that's quite a common occurrence among American dealers. They just don't want to go to the trouble of sending it outside the country.
Would there have been a customs issue with this?
Because it's an item that is potentially valuable, I think, yeah, they would have had to fill in a declaration of what its value was.
The worth, right, exactly.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
How did you bypass this then?
Well, it turns out my brother Greg lives in the U.S.
Greg Goldsborough?
That's right.
Okay.
So when I succeeded in purchasing the album, I had it mailed to him. And then he forwarded it on to me, and because it was just between person and person.
Right, right. You
know, no paperwork involved.
Yeah.
And so when the album arrived, I went down a deep rabbit hole trying to find out who had compiled it.
The investigator, Gordon Goldsborough. So What did you find? Who took these pictures?
Well, at first I thought it had been taken by a professional photographer. You know, there was a photo studio operating in Waskada in 1905, but, you know, something about the photos, you know, the composition, the subject matter, suggested to me they were taken by an amateur. But my first thought was that possible?
Yeah.
You know, unlike today, of course, where everyone carries a camera in their pocket, cameras in 1905 were much less common. But they were not unknown, because it turned out in 1888, inventor George Eastman had introduced his Kodak personal camera, and in 1899, the Canadian Kodak Company was incorporated. It released an inexpensive camera known as a Brownie in 1900, 5 years before this album was taken. So it seems entirely plausible to me that these photos were taken by someone in Waskada using their newly purchased Kodak Brownie.
Yeah, that Brownie really changed history.
Well, it gave us views that we would have otherwise never had.
Yep, and made it easy for people to do something that was, I guess, previously unavailable to them. So was there anything about the photos that made you think they were taken by an amateur and not a professional?
Yeah, well, simply because the quality was a little bit irregular. So, for example, one of the photos showed a Presbyterian church in Waskada, and it had a conical spire topped with a cross. Well, you know, usually if you're taking a picture of that, you'd make sure the cross is entirely in the view. But in this case, the top of the cross was cropped right off. And I thought, well, that's not a good sign of a professional. That's more likely an amateur.
Sure.
The horizon wasn't level. And that's a real rookie mistake if you don't have your horizon level. And in some cases, the way they composed the picture just didn't seem to me to show evidence of real expertise. The church, by the way, that Presbyterian church, is still there.
Oh.
It's part of present-day Waskada United Church. But what really broke the case open for me was that there was a photo showing two young women, two young men, along with a pair of horses that was labeled picnicking, and a handwritten label above two of the people, one man, one woman. The woman was labeled Ella Gray, the man Levi Young. And that turned out to be the absolute motherload of information.
Yeah, I've seen these pictures. They're quite charming, actually. People kind of relaxing, as you would in full suit and long dress to the ankles. But yeah, so what was the beginning then of your detective work?
Well, another one of the photos in the album was labeled The Manse. In other words, the resident of a church minister. And I suspected, therefore, that was the minister of the Presbyterian church. Two women, a young boy, and a dog were shown standing outside the manse. And again, there was a handwritten caption on it that said, Mary Barclay, Harold, Laddie, who I assume was the dog, and Ella Gray. And there was Ella Gray again, who had been in that other picture. So it seemed that Ella Gray had some connection to the Presbyterian Church's minister. You know, maybe she was visiting the manse, or maybe she lived in it. Eventually, it was the photo of those four young people that gave me the final clue. I searched the 1911 Canadian census, and I found a list of people living at Waskada in 1911. Among them was Levi M. Young, age 32, and his occupation was given as conveyancer.
Huh.
And if that doesn't ring a bell for anybody, it didn't for me. I looked it up. That's somebody who handles paperwork relating to real estate transactions. But living at the same household was Levi's 26-year-old wife, Ella, and their two children, 4-year-old Charlton and 2-year-old daughter, Georgina.
Oh, so those two people in the photo then were married?
That's my supposition,
okay,
yes.
Good.
And I checked the birth records at Manitoba Vital Statistics, and yes, there they were. Charlton Young, born 1906. Georgie Ella Young, born 1908, both at Waskada, and their mother's maiden name, Ella Gray. So now I had these detailed, I turned to a local history book for the Waskada region, and there I found an absolute treasure trove of additional information about the family. So I know now that Levi Young was born in Ottawa in 1879, and he came to Western Canada in the early 1900s. At first, he taught at a one-room school near the village of Goodlands. Then he studied law at Deloraine. And of course, this was in the day when you apprenticed under an existing lawyer rather than going to law school.
Right.
And he also operated the Waskada Expositor. And now, that was a weekly newspaper that my records search determined had started in 1903, closed in 1909. So who knows? Maybe Levi Young was its sole proprietor. And we have no records from the Waskada Expositor, so we have no idea other than maybe that fact alone.
Sole proprietor, an actual conveyancer working at the Expositor.
That's right.
Gotcha.
And he turns out he married Ella Gray, who was in fact the stepdaughter to Presbyterian minister Alex Barclay.
Ah.
And the woman, Mary Barclay, that was shown in the picture was presumably her mother-in-law. And of course, that explains her presence at the manse. They married in 1905, which is the year before their first child was born. And as it happens, shortly after the Youngs appeared in the 1911 census at Wiskada, they moved to Winnipeg. Because the history book said, yes, they moved to Winnipeg in 1901. They lived there for the remainder of their lives. And their family eventually grew to 6 daughters and 5 sons.
No kidding.
So they were prolific, those Youngs. Levi Young died in 1962. Ella Gray Young in 1967. Both of them are buried in the Chapel Lawn Memorial Gardens out on the west outskirts of the city here.
Really interesting. So you said before your research didn't determine how the Young family album ended up in Michigan, though.
No, but I did find a very informative obituary for Levi Young, and here's a curious twist. It was right beside a birth announcement for my aforementioned brother, Greg.
What?
The one who delivered the Young album to me.
Come on.
Greg was born on the same day, the same month, the same year as Levi died.
No.
Like how weird
I
is
mean,
that?
Well, it makes perfect sense to me, Gordon. As soon as you get your fingers into stuff, there's always, synchronicities, right?
It was wild. Anyway, the obituary listed Levi and Ella's 11 children by name. And at that time, they lived all over the country. There were some here in Winnipeg. There were some in Saskatoon, in Calgary, Vancouver, Toronto, but none outside the country. And that's why I was pretty confident that there was no family connection to the U.S.
Yeah.
So I'm no closer to an explanation for how the Wiskada photo album ended up in Flint, Michigan. In any event, if anyone listening today is a descendant of Levi and Ella Young, and the surname might be different today, of course, and if you'd like to see the album or maybe even to have it returned, please get in touch with me. I'd love to see it go home to the family that,
for sure.
That it would mean something to.
Yeah.
In the meantime, what I think this case illustrates for me is that, the value of labeling photos in your family albums. You know, you can't be assured, even if those albums do stay in family hands, that anyone will know who's who 100 years from now. You know, and I was so lucky that those captions in the Wiskada album from 1905 were so descriptive that I could track down the family. So sometime, on an evening or maybe in the wintertime when you got some time on your hands, sit down with those albums, go through them. Maybe you don't know everybody, but label the people you do know, and I think your descendants will thank you.
Really interesting. And the brother connection.
Yeah,
The never-before-heard-of Greg Goldsborough.
He played a critical role in this story. That's right.
What's up for next week?
Well, the person who compiled this photo album clearly intended it to survive, and here it is, 120 years later, still around in good shape. But a lot of items of what we can call ephemera, well, they were never intended to survive for more than maybe a few days, a few weeks, maybe a few months. You know, think, for example, of the advertising literature that arrives in our mailboxes every day.
Oh, yeah.
You know, yet there are people like me who collect such items, and I'm going to talk about some of the treasures in my personal ephemera collection next week.
Okay, can't wait for that. Thanks, Gordon.
We'll talk then. Bye-bye for now.
Every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba.